Phil Mason Show. Phil Mason Show is on. Is on in five. In five. Four. Four. Three. Three. Two. Two. One. One.
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We're here for the full hour, and we've got a mixed bag today. We're going to talk a little San Antonio Spurs hoops. We're going to talk some Golden State Warrior hoops. But up first, the Texas Rangers. I guess a good word for me to describe the Texas Rangers currently is decimated by injury. I haven't seen this many injuries on a team in a very long time, especially this early in the season. And here to talk all about that with me, from Rush Olson Creative and Sport, please welcome Rush Olson to the show. Rush, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
I am well. It's good to be here, Phil. You mentioned the injuries. I just did a blog post about what I called the most disappointing team ever, like one that I had a lot of emotion invested into, and they just didn't do as well as they were supposed to. And it was the 2002 Rangers. And a big part of the reason was they had injuries. Their closer never pitched. Their number one starter got hurt before his first start. All this stuff. And watching what the Rangers have gone through early here in the spring, I was hoping it wouldn't be deja vu with this team. Hopefully this team has a little more depth than that team did.
So 2002 wasn't a very good year for you then.
The Rangers finished last, and what was such a bummer about it, because I worked for the team at the time, was there were such high hopes. They had spent a lot of money in free agency. They signed Chan Ho Park, who was coming off a couple good years in Los Angeles. They re-signed Juan Gonzalez to come in, exceeded their budget to do so. They had A-Rod. They had Rafael Palmeiro. They had Michael Young was just starting out. A lot of it was guys that either were just a little too late or not quite ready yet. Hank Blaylock the year before he broke out. So it was, and they just had devastating injuries. I was doing commercials for the Rangers at the time, and we had a heck of a time trying to figure out what to run, because it seemed like as soon as we would get a commercial edited with a guy in it, he'd go on the DL. So it was just wild.
2002 was a wild year for me, too. I lost my tennis club in Vegas and wound up here in Greece.
Well, then you can certainly, yours at least turned out a little better than the Rangers did. They will always be in last place. At least you were able to relocate.
Yeah, I was able to reload, you mean. It was awful, yes. Believe me. But anyway, I feel like the Rangers this year, a little out of sorts, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel for them and for me. Mm-hmm, can you imagine? Mm-hmm. They've lost Holland. They've lost Profar, Harrison, Saunders, Soto. Ron Washington has been reduced to a six-man rotation, and now he's down to five. What do you do if you're the Rangers?
Well, you keep doing what they've been doing, and that is replacing from within and supplementing from the outside. And so one of the things that the Rangers have done a good job of the last several years is getting their farm system to the point where they can contribute when they're needed. And so last year they had some early season injuries. So they had a couple of guys, Nick Tepish and Justin Grimm, they were able to bring up and sort of hold the fort the first couple months until some of those guys got healthy. And then this year the same has been true. They've moved Robbie Ross, a young pitcher, from the bullpen into the rotation. He had a good start his first time out. They brought Nick Martinez up to make a start, and he pitched well. And so now they've optioned him back to the minors. They brought Colby Lewis in on a minor league contract, which, if you recall, this Colby Lewis signing a few years back was one that they, was questioned, and it ended up being a good one. They judged him well. And so that's kind of what the Rangers have to do, is they just have built up enough depth, they hope, that they can endure through these injuries until Matt Harrison, who made a good rehab start, gets back, and Derek Holland gets back, and heck, even Joe Saunders. I mean, they brought him in to help with the depth due to the injuries, and then a freak accident, he gets hit with a batted ball by Evan Longoria, and he's out. So they just, hopefully for the Rangers' sake, they will be able to make those adjustments.
Well, they had better, because the West is going to be very competitive this season, but when you look at this baseball club, Alex Rios is doing what he's supposed to be doing. Elvis Andrus is doing what he's supposed to be doing. Chinsoo Chu, I watched them play against Tampa Bay the other night. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. Mitch Moreland is sort of doing what he's supposed to be doing, but the rest of them aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. Adrian Beltre, through seven games, has not even hit one bomb yet. He only has two RBIs. Prince Fielder, no bombs through seven games, 28 at-bats. He has but one RBI. This is what I think, Rush. I think that Ian Kinsler visited a witch doctor and put a hex on them because this is not the offense we expected.
Well, you know, here's the thing. He and Beltre are pretty good friends, so I'd like to think he wouldn't do that to Beltre. You know, whether he did it to Prince Fielder or not, I think we can't rule out the possibility of some sort of voodoo being involved. With Beltre, you know, he's also made three errors so far, which for him is quite a bit. The Rangers' defense has been a bit more suspect than it was last year. My thought on Beltre is his stuff will even out. He tends to go through times when he's not producing offensively and comes back strong. And the same defensively, he's going to make a lot more plays than he's going to miss. Elvis Andrus has committed three errors too. Same deal. He's going to make a lot more plays than he's going to mess up. Prince Fielder, should they be worried about him? Hard to say. Probably not. Offensively, he had an error in last night's game, and defensively, I think is one place where he does not add value. And it was sort of interesting to me that they brought him in, and he's going to play first base every day because apparently he traditionally has produced better offensively when he plays defensively. They have a better defensive option at first base in Mitch Moreland. But they want to maximize Fielder's offensive productivity, so they leave him in the field. It would be interesting to see if there comes a point in the season when they maybe – I can't imagine them taking Fielder out of the lineup if he doesn't produce. But if they start to say, well, you know, I wonder if this might be a good time for Fielder to learn to be a DH and learn to be to produce offensively and at least shore up the defense there, assuming Moreland continues to hit reasonably well offensively. He hasn't produced any power yet, but at least he's been getting on base a bit.
Well, they're not going to let Prince Fielder DH, man, because can you imagine what that training table is going to look like? He'll be in there eating sandwiches all afternoon, come up to a bat. He'll be like Babe Ruth minus the beer, because I don't think he drinks beer. But I don't know. That's not a bad idea, though, to DH him. They wanted to do that in Detroit, I think. But, well... It is what it is over there.
Well, and when you're a player and you say, look, here's some of the things I need to succeed, and one of those things is not necessarily good for the team. You know, Prince Fielder, I've heard he's a hard worker, that he certainly works hard on his defense. He's just not as good as Mitch Moreland. Mitch Moreland has made himself into an average to above average defender over there at first base. So if the reason you're leaving Fielder out in the field is so that his offense is better, but his offense isn't producing, you know, at that point, I think that's when you really have to evaluate where you're playing him. And let's face it, look at that contract Fielder has. You look at his body type, which is his body type. I mean, it's not that he's necessarily lets himself go. Supposedly he works very hard. You have to figure at some point in that contract, you might want to say his defense will deteriorate to the point where you really want him to be at DH. And if that's going to be the case, he probably needs to learn how to do it and be effective.
That makes sense. You know, the thing is, he looks like he's slimmed down a bit too. And he is a big boy, just like his father was a big boy.
Sure.
But the guy's played like every game for the last three seasons. He's very durable, but he's not very flexible. And that's what gives him a problem in defense, I think. But, honestly speaking, this Jurickson Profar injury, that put a kibosh in their plans because that's the reason they traded Kinsler in the first place, is to make room for Profar, and now you got a mess. You also, I don't know, I'm not a doctor or anything, and I don't watch the Rangers every night, but I did watch them play against Tampa Bay when David Price was pitching. And it looks like Elvis Andrus is not moving the same way that he has done in the past. And I'm wondering if, or I should say I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop with him too.
Well, you know, he had that arm, sort of a dead arm in spring training after he didn't throw on it a lot in the off season. So the arm was the part that I think most people were worried about. The only live game of theirs I've seen so far, I thought the arm looked great. He made a couple of throws that said, hey, all right, the arm is back just fine. Whether or not his range is suffering for some reason, it's hard to say. We do know he's made three errors so far. That, of course, that's not how you necessarily evaluate a defender like him, because he gets to so many balls that other shortstops might. If there's something the matter with him, they've got to fix it, because their depth has been seriously compromised with the Profar injury and the Kinsler trade. They've got a couple of pretty studly prospects at the middle infield positions. But they're not quite ready. They're not quite ready to take over. And so now they are sort of stuck playing Donnie Murphy at second and Josh Wilson at second. And guys that are perhaps solid veterans, but definitely don't have the upside that a Profar or an Odor or a Sardinas does.
Those are all good points. Now the pitching, Yu Darvish. He's still Yu Darvish.
Some article I read the other day wished that he had gone it that had the Rangers opening day was a slugfest. Tanner Shepard's got roughed up a little bit, but the Rangers really took it to Cliff Lee. And somebody pointed out, you know, that should have been Darvish's game. And if you score seven runs off Cliff Lee, odds are you Darvish is holding that lead.
You got that right. It looked more like the Eagles and the Cowboys. Good Lord, there was a lot of runs. But Darvish is going to be okay, I think. Joaquin Soria is going to be okay. Tanner Shepard, he's going to get knocked around a little bit, I think. He's getting a baptism by fire, that poor fella. Go ahead.
Well, the one thing I was going to say is he's only made two starts in the major leagues, and he hasn't been starting games at all. He improved from his first start to his second start. The question is what happens now. There's no question his stuff can play. I mean, the guy has a tremendous fastball. The breaking pitches are there. It's a matter of, can he buckle down? He seems to have a good attitude about it. The good news with him is if he doesn't produce as a starter, there's certainly a long tradition of starting pitchers that didn't quite work out that have moved in to be very effective bullpen pieces. He's shown he can do it in the bullpen. It's almost like he's playing with house money here, because he's going to either succeed as a starter, and that'll be good for him and good for the Rangers, or he's going to fail as a starter, and he's still going to have a good job pitching the seventh or eighth inning.
Yeah, maybe so. I think he's going to pan out, though, because the kid pitches pretty well. The one I like, though, a lot is Robbie Ross. You mentioned earlier in the show, he was throwing bullets the other night. He struck out like seven guys in seven innings and only walked, let me see what he walked, two batters in five innings. So he was rocking and rolling. This is a kid I like a lot. I think he's going to stick in that rotation no matter who comes back.
Well, you know, he almost made their rotation last year, and they kind of needed him in the bullpen, and so they put him there. But he's one of those guys that doesn't seem overwhelming. I remember the first time I ever met him, he was, I think, 18 years old. He was in the Fall Instructional League. The Rangers had just drafted and signed him, and he was out there. He was very polite kid, yes sir, no sir, all that sort of stuff. But apparently, once you get him out on the mound, he's very focused, and he really, you know, he's not afraid to throw strikes, which Ron Washington loves, and he's the kind of guy that seems to at least have the mentality to succeed.
Yeah, I agree with you too. I think this baseball team is going to be okay. They need to get healthy. That's the big thing. What they need to do is get more production out of guys like Fielder and Beltre, which we know he's going to hit. I mean, they made a point on the telecast. It was the Tampa Bay Rays announcers. They said, he's 35 years old, but he still hits like he's 25, and that's a compliment.
Yes, he's very diligent about his conditioning, too.
And Leonis Martin, he needs to get it together a little bit. And if these guys can get it together, and I think they will get it together, they'll make a pretty interesting race in the West, don't you think?
Definitely. Keep in mind, you know, they've played seven games. They're 3-4. The division leader is Seattle, who's 4-2. So it's not one of those situations where they have come out of the gate really cold and another team has come out of the gate really hot and you know, put them in a hole to start with. They're right where, you know, you're fine with being the first week. They get Colby Lewis back. He made a rehab start, pitched well. It looks like they're going to bring him back and put him in the rotation. So there's a pitcher they were hoping would get healthy who apparently is. Matt Harrison seems like he's on the right track. So the upside for the Rangers seems to be pretty good. I think if you take a look at what Nick Martinez did, the young kid in his first start, the Robbie Ross, who we just talked about, Yu Darvish apparently being Yu Darvish again, and then you're getting these other guys back, the Rangers appear, it looks like they're going to be better in the upcoming months than they are right now, and that positions them well.
Yes, it does. I tell you what, great stuff today, Rush. Thanks so much for being on the show with me.
You bet.
All right, that was Rush Olson. You can find him over at Rush Olson Creative and Sport. Coming up next, Michael Erler and I are going to argue about Tony Parker. I don't think Tony Parker's all that. I think he's in love with him. Anyway, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Check this out.
Say, kids, what time is it?
Abscape Radio is your choice for music.
All right, let's do this.
From house, trance, pop, and rock. Online community and EDM-based radio.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com. Or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
Read what happens when an Orange County housewife decides she likes another man more than her husband. Join Brooklyn through her struggles in this coming-of-age saga filled with full-blown drama and real-life secrets that are no longer kept. Two great novels, one great author. You can find Brooklyn and Beau Chronicles at BrendaPerlin.com. That's www.BrendaPerlin.com.
Great books and interviews with the authors that write them are featured on the Writer Showcase podcast. I invite you to check it out at thewritershow.wordpress.com. Fantasy Baseball Weekly is a weekly baseball podcast with a fantasy owner in mind. We give you tips, tricks, tools, and everything else we can think of to help you win your league. You can catch us at fantasybaseballweekly.wordpress.com or on philnasons.com. Come check us out.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
here are some words of wisdom from Mr. Know-It-All.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
What a dope. What a maroon.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The San Antonio Spurs have pretty much, at least at the time of this recording, locked up the top spot in the West. And here to talk about possible playoff matchups, Tony Parker being out, and why in the world can't the San Antonio Spurs defeat the Oklahoma City Thunder. Please welcome from PoundingTheRock.com, Michael Erler is in the house. Michael, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm in my new residence, and I have internet there for the first time in 12 years.
Yeah, internet's a good thing. I'm a fan of it.
I'm a big fan of it, because this is the first time, Michael, where I've been able to do my show, do my writing in private. That's a beautiful thing.
Away from prying eyes?
Oh, thousands of them every day. Apparently, they don't see too many Americans and or well-known ones, and they like to keep an eye on what I try to do. But it's all good. You know what? It's kind of like the opposite of the San Antonio Spurs, because nobody seems to pay attention to them, at least the national media. Now they are. But they just go about their business nice and quietly. They've wrapped up the West pretty much. But Tony Parker is out. He's going to miss a couple games with some kind of strain, right?
Yeah, he's out for at least the Minnesota and Dallas road games, because it's a two-game road trip. And, just to rest that back. And he said on his weekly French radio show that he doesn't think it's at all a serious injury, and just kind of like a precautionary thing, just some back inflammation. So I wouldn't read too much into it. It might be the kind of thing where if it was a playoff game, I think he would play, he would give it a go. But, with the situation they're in, where, like you said, the first seed is almost wrapped up, the magic number is two, there's no need to push anything. And I would suspect that once the Spurs do indeed clinch that home court advantage over Oklahoma City, that, the minutes will take a sharp downturn for most of the veterans on that team, like Tim Duncan, like Manu Ginobili, and, even some of the younger guys like Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard.
They don't really need Tony Parker to win anyway, do they?
I think going from round two onward, they do certainly.
Why would you? They played so well without him, and he hasn't played that well recently. I mean, Patty Mills has kind of stepped in there and taken care of business. I think, honestly, that they could probably win the West, or at least get as far as Oklahoma City without Parker.
No, I'm sorry. I have to disagree. I think Parker is the guy that, of the big three, he's the most replaceable for, any short stretch, whether it's one game, two games. But over a long series of games, you really do miss his scoring, and you miss his ability to, create, in the paint for himself and to drive and kick for others. I think, when you have Manu Ginobili, he's a great playmaker, he's a great shot creator, but as we saw in the finals last year, you really don't want to extend him for, to do that, for 40 minutes a game, 35 minutes a game. He's just too old to be able to do that for a long haul. And I think Parker takes a lot of the pressure off the team with his ball handling and with his ability, to control the ball and be the, the head of the snake, as they say, for, 30 minutes a night.
Well, I don't know. I think he takes too many vacations for me. I've never been a fan of Tony Parker, though, so.
He was fantastic last season. I mean, I think he had his best year last year. This year, like you said, he's been a lot worse. And it's true that Patty Mills has stepped up huge and, really given them a lift off the bench. But at the same time, I think that's what Patty Mills is. I think he's an off-the-bench spark plug. And I think you're misusing him if you play him out, big minutes with the starters. I think he's a spark plug off the bench.
That's fair enough. I'll tell you who is playing great is Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard is doing what I thought he would do. Before this is all said and done, if he stays healthy, he'll be that fourth face on the San Antonio Spurs Mount Rushmore. He's played just fantastic the last few nights. He's back. He's healthy. I love watching that kid play.
Yeah, he's been a completely different player since coming back from that broken hand. I mean, before that injury, I mean, his defense was there. He was, you know, playing elite level defense. But offensively, his 3-point shot was a little bit wonky, and you know, offensively he was inconsistent. And ever since he's come back, his shot has been as good as anybody in the leagues. I mean, he's like almost shooting 50% from 3-point range lately. And also, you know, he seems to have one of the best mid-range shots on the team right now. You know, the Spurs, outside of Tony Parker and maybe Patty Mills, they're not very good at shooting long twos. They don't really enjoy shooting long twos. I think they were ahead of most teams in the NBA in that regard, is figuring out that the long two is the most inefficient shot in the league, so they don't bother shooting very many of them. But, you know, Duncan's struggled with it the whole year. But Leonard's mid-range game has been really fantastic of late. His stroke looks really good. And right now, there aren't many small forwards in the league playing better than him. You know, you've got LeBron and Kevin Durant, certainly. But outside of that, I mean, you'd have to put Leonard right there, you know, as a two-way overall player with any small forward in the league.
Oh, of course. I had people tell me at the beginning of the season I was crazy for saying how good this kid was going to be. And now he's finally healthy. But I like watching him. Out of the five starters, you lose either Kawhi Leonard or Tim Duncan. This is my opinion, of course. And the San Antonio Spurs are toast.
I think if you lose any of the four, they're toast, personally. But, I mean, I think they have four guys they can't replace. And, you know, if they want to be a title contender. But outside of that, maybe they could lose, like, you know, a Bellinelli and get away with it, or a Danny Green get away with it, even a Tiao Splitter. But I don't think they could lose any of those four guys and be a serious championship threat.
You know, I think there was a stat that said that the San Antonio Spurs were 50-9. I think I saw this last week. 50-9 with Kawhi Leonard, and not so good when he's gone.
Well, I saw that stat, and I agree he's incredibly valuable. Don't get me wrong. But that's a misleading stat, because a lot of the time that he missed this year also coincided with Manu Ginobili being out, with Danny Green being out, and with Tiago Splitter being out. So, and even Tony Parker was out for some of that stretch. So a lot of those losses were basically just Tim Duncan and, you know, role players. And that's it. Like, the second best player in some of those games was Patty Mills and Marco Bellinelli. And that's who they were going to war with, was those three guys. So I think it's kind of a misleading stat.
Oh, I don't think it is at all. In fact, I think, honestly, you can see the difference in the Spurs when he's on the floor. He takes some of that pressure away from Tim Duncan, defensively anyway. Tony Parker's Tony Parker, but why can't the Spurs beat Oklahoma City?
Well, I think a lot of it is just situational things. I mean, for example, the last matchup, it was the Spurs' fifth game in seven nights, whereas for Oklahoma City, they were rested for three days going into that game. And the two teams they played prior to that game were Utah and Sacramento at home. So it was one of those deals where Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, you know, sat in the fourth quarters of those games. And, you know, those guys are usually big minutes guys. So anytime they get rest, it's beneficial to them. So, I mean, Oklahoma City had a huge rest advantage going into that game. Obviously, they had the home court advantage. And the Spurs played without Manu Ginobili. The Spurs were actually leading at halftime of that game. And then if you notice in the third quarter, Pop really changed the lineups around. He wanted to look at some different guys. He didn't play Tim Duncan all that much in the second half. He didn't play Tony Parker all that much in the second half. They didn't even start Kawhi Leonard in that third quarter. They tried this bizarre three-big lineup of Duncan, Splitter, and Boris Diaw, which, you know, I don't think – I know for a fact they've never used the whole season. And then they tried a couple of other lineups where they very, very seldom used, you know, the whole season going into that game, like 30 minutes the whole season, some of the, you know, bizarre micro sample size. So I think the first half Pop played it kind of seriously. And then the second half, he kind of did some experimental things where, you know, just to see what could work in the future if maybe Kawhi Leonard has foul trouble or something like that. So, and, you know, as for the other times the Oklahoma City's beaten Spurs this year, I mean, Kawhi Leonard played one out of those eight quarters in a couple of those losses, and Ginobili wasn't fully healthy, you know. So there have been situational things. There's been rest factors, back-to-backs, things like that. I don't know if the two teams have ever been, like, you know, fully healthy and fully rested going against each other, you know, in this season. So, you know, there's been, like, and, you know, sometimes Oklahoma City's just been better. but I don't think there's anything conclusive one way or the other. I mean, don't get me wrong, the Spurs will have to play at their best to beat them in a 7-game series, but with home court, I like their chances against anybody.
That's fair enough, but Oklahoma City beat the tar out of the Spurs all four times. You can make all the excuses you want, but you still have to play the games. And let's be honest, the San Antonio Spurs bench is far better than Oklahoma City's bench. And also, keep this in mind, Russell Westbrook missed two of those four games, I believe. So, the regular season kind of tells me something. They, like you just said, they had better play at the top of their games, or else they're going to go home. And they better be healthy, too. They cannot afford to lose anyone. Maybe they can afford to lose a Green, but outside of that, they might be in trouble.
Well, one thing the Spurs haven't been very comfortable with doing, at least Popovich hasn't been, has been playing small ball. They just haven't done it very much the last couple of years. And Miami kind of forced them to do it in the finals. And the Spurs were actually, you know, decent at it, but it's still not something that they're totally comfortable with. And I think both against Houston and Oklahoma City, it's going to be something where Thiago Splitter is really going to be relegated into a minor role, maybe just strictly as Tim Duncan's backup. And I don't think it's going to be a kind of situation where Thiago and Tim Duncan are going to play very much together. I think some of that, you know, he's going to play some with, Duncan's going to play some with Boris Diaw. So that's kind of like, you know, in between, regular, having two bigs and a small ball. But I think a lot of time it's going to be Kawhi Leonard as that stretch four, and then three smalls. So, you know, with like Tony Parker, Danny Green, Manu Ginobili, or Marco Bellinelli will come in for either Green or Ginobili. So I think a lot of times it's going to be, you know, small against small, because the Thunder, they just prefer to play, you know, with Ibaka as their main center, if you will, and then Kawhi Leonard, and then Kevin Durant as their stretch four. So I think it's something the Spurs have to get comfortable with, and especially against their length and athleticism, you know, to pass the ball, drive, you know, shoot. The Spurs are going to need guys who can who can do all those things. And Thiago Splitter, you know, inside the paint, you know, with his little pump fakes and hook shots, they just don't get it done. He's just not athletic enough to handle Oklahoma City, and he keeps getting the ball stripped away from him, and the referees don't really help him out very much. So I don't think Oklahoma City is a good opponent for Thiago.
Oklahoma City is not a very good opponent for anyone in the West, to be honest with you. Now, if the playoffs began today, well, let's just say this. There's three teams vying for that A spot. You've got Phoenix, Dallas, or Memphis. Which of those three teams would you not want to see?
I don't really mind any of them. I mean, I'm not afraid of any of them if I'm a Spurs fan. But I think of those three, the one that's the most threatening would be Phoenix, just because, you know, they're kind of like a poor man's version of Oklahoma City, just with, you know, smaller guys. I mean, they have a really athletic backcourt with Eric Bledsoe and Goran Dragic, and then they have a pick and pop game with Channing Frye that hurts some people. You know, he gets all the way to the 3-point line, which, you know, is going to again make it difficult for a guy like Thiago Splitter to get out there. And plus they just haven't been around together very long as a team. You know, they have the Morris twins who've come on. They've got Gerald Green, you know, who's gone nuts this year. And it's just not a team that's been established very, very long. And, you know, the Spurs haven't gotten enough reps to really know what they're doing against them quite yet. And instead, when you have Dallas or you have Memphis, you have more established teams, more established players. And I think the Spurs have a better handle on those teams. And they've swept both of them very easily this year.
Yes, they have. But remember now, let's be consistent. You say it doesn't mean anything because Oklahoma City swept the Spurs.
So I'm just saying as far as they just have a more of a handle on the personnel.
Okay, that's fair enough. Because you know what, the team that I would probably not want to see would be Dallas. Because Nowitzki, he does these funny things. He comes out and he forces your big to come out with him, and it'd be scary. Especially if it's Thiago Splitter.
Well, Dallas can score. I mean, Dallas is one of the most efficient offense in the league. The thing about Dallas is they just can't stop the Spurs at all defensively. They have that small backcourt with Calderon and Monte Ellis. And, you know, Tony Parker can just go right around those guys. And there's not much of an interior presence stopping them. And, you know, their best defensive player is Sean Marion. And he's almost 40 years old. I mean, Dallas is just a nightmare defensively. And and they know it. They play like this dinky zone defense that really isn't very good anymore. And they really have no chance against the Spurs defensively.
Yeah, but it'll still be an interesting series. And I think Also, Memphis would pose some issues for the Spurs as well. It should be interesting, though. This week, the San Antonio Spurs have Dallas, Phoenix, and Houston. If you're a fantasy player out there, folks, it's time to yank the Spurs from your saddle because you're in big trouble. Because Popovich is going to start resting the boys, and rightly so. Great stuff today, Michael. Thanks so much for being on the show with me.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that was Michael Oehler. You can find him over at poundingtherock.com. Coming up next, Zeb Benbrook and I will take a look at the Golden State Warriors, all the turmoil. And hey, they made the playoffs. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Phil Nason Show will return.
You are a meathead, dead from the neck up.
After these brief messages.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epix Radio. Listen online, www.epixradio.com.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24-7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Are you a fan of historical fiction? If you are, then why not try author Mary Ann Bernal's The Briton and the Dane series of historical fiction novels. You can purchase these novels from her website at www.maryannbernal.com. That's www.maryannbernal.com. Are you looking to escape into lands full of fantasy, drama, and adventure? If you are, why not try author Kay Metter's books? Their Journey Begins, Journey to Freedom, The Night of the Dixie Wilds, On Top of the Rainbow, and Transcendence will get you there. Kay Metter's books are available as an ebook or in paperback, and you can find her at authorkmeador.com. That's authorkmeador.com.
Check this out.
Say, kids, what time is it?
Abscape Radio is your choice for music.
All right, let's do this.
From house, trance, pop, and rock, your online community and EDM-based radio.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcasts.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at baseballpodcasts.net.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
know what I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
That freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Shut up! Shut up!
Yes! Shut up!
Shut up. You're telling me to shut up?
Please, just shut up. I am so sick of hearing you talking, talking, talking all the time. Don't you ever just shut up?
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The Golden State Warriors have been labeled by Adrian Wojnarowski as dysfunctional. But if they're going to keep winning, I'll take dysfunction any day of the week. And here to talk all about that and more, please welcome from WelcomeToLoudCity.com, Zeb Benbrook is in the house. Zeb, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me back on.
It's my pleasure. You know, we lost last week because of this stupid internet troubles, but now life seems to be better, and we're going to talk some hoops because it's been a while and since you've been here. What's going on with the Golden State Warriors, dude?
Well, right now we're in a really tough race for that fifth Western Conference playoff spot. We play the Blazers later this week or next week, at the tail end of the season. And if we can run the table against a bunch of, you know, really mid-range to easy teams, I think we could make a serious run. You know, all you've got to do is you've got to, you know, wrap it up against teams that are out of the playoffs, like L.A., Denver twice, Minnesota. All these teams don't have anything to play for. All of them just want a better pick. So if you can take care of business against those four teams, have an upset against Portland, all of a sudden you're in the 4-5 seed and, you know, in a better position to win, I think, because I think we're better against Houston than we would be against the Clippers.
And I think Portland would hope for that, too, because they don't match up very well with Houston, even though I think they would beat them. But the Dubs play Portland on Sunday. In the meantime, they have Denver at home, and then they're away with the Lakers, and then they're away with Portland, and then home again with Minnesota, and then they close the season next week. And we'll be here to talk about that probably with Denver at Denver. This is a team that's interesting, but the Denver Lakers games are back-to-back. Is that going to pose a problem because David Lee is out? Jermaine O'Neal's balling, though, man. I got to tell you, it seems like this squad hasn't really missed him too much, and I don't think they're going to miss him too much other than the game against Portland.
Yeah, you know, it's I don't, you know, because we're going against these really offensive squads, and it's kind of interesting because he's been out the past two games, April 4th against the Kings and April 6th against the Jazz. And against those two teams, we've scored a lot. I mean, we had 102 against Sacramento, 130 against Utah, and we just didn't really have any trouble on the offensive end of the floor, and the problem was defensive. And it's interesting because Draymond Green is considered to be the better defender and David Lee is considered to be the better offensive player. So it's kind of weird how we would do so well offensively without him because he's just such a bad defensive player. But when you have him back in that lineup, you have that depth. And when you got Denver and LA back-to-back, they're both high-scoring teams. So considering how well we were able to do against Sacramento and Utah and the return of Harrison Barnes, that's been huge. I think that we'll have the depth and the talent to be able to get through those teams. I don't think that depth is a real problem for Golden State unless some other guys start dropping out with injuries.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, Denver's going to be missing Ty Lawson, too. That's not going to help them much. And that's a good thing. The Lakers, you got Swaggy P and the boys. The Lakers, my goodness. But that's going to be an interesting game because you got the freewheeling D'Antoni offense against the Bombs Away boys who freaking lit it up against Utah. My God. Klay Thompson, God bless you, Klay. You know, since his grandmother died, this kid has been on fire. Maybe his father talked to him a little bit about shooting and scoring and being more consistent. I don't know, but he went for 33 against Utah. Now, Utah's not the best defensive team out there, but 33 is 33, right?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, Klay Thompson has done really well since his bad stretch near the All-Star break. Back then, he was having some real problems because I think that Mark Jackson was putting too much decision-making in his hands. Naturally, he's a scorer, he's a shooter, and he's really confident when he's taking that shot. But then when you draw up plays for him and ask him to make those decisions, ask him, say, you know, where do you pass this ball here? Where do you pass that ball here? Do you pass or do you shoot? If you take that decision-making away and just tell him, be confident, then he can go right at the hole or shoot it immediately. Then just decide what you want to do before you get the ball or right when you get the ball. Just don't hesitate, you know? And he's really learned that, you know, maybe the death of his grandmother had something to play with that. I'm not sure, but There's a great article over at Golden State of Mind explaining that. And if you look at his stats, you'll see that early in the season, he was getting a ton of assists. Then he went with those problems. Then he kind of got more comfortable as just a scorer. His assists are down, but his scoring is still up. And that's exactly what we need for him. And that's why we've been able to be such a good scoring team without the presence of David Lee. And that's why I think that we're going to be able to beat the Nuggets and the Lakers, you know, despite their fast play.
That makes sense. Another guy who's been getting off recently is Maurice Spates. He's starting to click it together. He has, in his last five games, he's averaging 12.2 points and 8.8 rebounds. I'm telling you, they're a better basketball team without David Lee against some of these teams. I mean, David Lee, he tries to play defense, but he's really a scorer. And Spates is playing a little bit of defense, too. And I'm liking what I see over there in Golden State.
Yeah, it's kind of a really hard question, because there are some games where you just look at what Maurice Spates is able to do and you think, like, hey, this is good. 10-10 guy, he's a good hard worker. Why do we need David Lee? And the problem with David Lee on offense is that he just sucks in the ball. You know, he's just an ISO-type player. And that's something that Mark Jackson likes. But, you know, as you said, you know, Adrian Wojnarowski talked about how this was a functional team. And Mark Jackson's kind of running this 90s-style offense where he's just giving, you know, possessions to guys who, you know, want just put him in the post and have him score. And I think, quite frankly, Jermaine O'Neal has been almost as effective at David Lee as doing that while bringing the defensive presence. So I think that, honestly, he's better, you know, just as a player. You know, he can't really slot in at power forward. But I think that if you put in Spates and you put in Green, I think that you become a better overall defensive team. The offense flows a little bit more, and you definitely lose a little bit of talent, but you're definitely good against other teams that are going to get into high-scoring contests against you or something like that. The only thing where I think it would really hurt is if we're against a really good defensive team and we just don't have that ISO threat to score, because Klay Thompson isn't a huge ISO threat, and you've just got Curry and O'Neal, and Iguodala can't really do that anymore, so you're going to need to rely on Lee for some type of stuff like that. So I'd like to see him in the playoffs, but honestly, if he could stay out of the Nuggets and Lakers games, I wouldn't be too sad.
Yeah, that makes sense, and you definitely want him in the playoffs because he's going to get a double-double every night. And like I said, he does try to play defense. But Draymond Green is balling. I'll tell you what, he plays better defense. I said this on Tuesday's show. I'll say this again. I remember when Golden State drafted Draymond Green. People said to me, oh, he has that old man's game. I said, that's the type of game that Mark Jackson respects. Because like you said, he's got that 90s offense, that 90s type throwback deal. And he likes to do it that way. Draymond Green is a kid who will do whatever his coach tells him. It's a beautiful thing, and he's playing really well. I'm enjoying watching him play. The other guy I'm enjoying watching is Jordan Crawford. He's been scoring off the bench. He's finally accepted the role that he's not going to be the main scorer like he was in Boston. And he's been averaging double digits his last four games. So this bench is actually starting to really come through, which that was always a question mark, right?
Yeah, it definitely was, because, you know, you had to integrate those new two players because Jordan Crawford was a trade, Steve Blake was a trade, and you kind of had to integrate them into the offense. And Jordan Crawford is such a real erratic player. I mean, he's had some really, really, really good efficient games, but he doesn't really have a go-to play that he can just go to every single game and score. He's going to be a guy who's just going to try to get creative. And there are some games where he's going to look like a virtuoso, and there's some games where he's going to look like me hammering at a piano. You know, it's just one or the other. So he's real. And Steve Blake kind of has had some trouble. It's kind of hard for him to get his three percentages down. But, you know, he's a veteran. He'll play through it. He's really good about moving the ball. That's what we really needed in our on our bench. You know, we didn't need Iguodala playing backup point guard. So he's slotted in kind of well. And, you know, I'm really optimistic about how our bench is going to do in the playoffs.
You know what? I think you're right. I think it should be interesting. And it's going to be a good basketball team. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this dysfunction. Brian Scalabrine was reassigned. He's an assistant coach. It's the second assistant coach who's basically lost their job in the last week. What do you make of all that? Is it Mark Jackson being a dictator, or is it he doesn't trust these guys, or he doesn't need them? What do you think is happening there?
You know, I mean, I don't know for sure. I can never know for sure, but to be honest, I think it's just, you know, one of those power plays, because when you've got a coach, because it's just, I think one big thing that fans don't understand about coaching is that coaches simply cannot keep track of absolutely everything that's going on in the basketball game. So you need an army of like 7 to 8 guys who are all working together. And those other guys are all going to be competing for power because, you know, they want the higher salary because, you know, they're not getting paid like NBA players are. They're getting paid hundreds of Ks, but they want millions. So, you know, they want that and they're really good at their craft, but, you know, it's hard to get them all to work together and they've all got to keep track of their own things. And so when you've got a head coach, he can't draw up all the offensive and defensive plays. So he's got to kind of, you know, delegate. And when you put it to a guy like Brian Scalabrine and you tell him, you know, you take over the offense or you take over the defense or whatever Brian Scalabrine might have done, you know, I wasn't in the meetings. It's, you know, it's always going to be hard because, you know, he might have different philosophy than you might. He might make adjustments that you might not make and you might butt heads over that. And, you know, it's just an unfortunate situation that happens so late in the season. It's not good for anybody. But, you know, if the way that the Warriors have been playing against, you know, those two teams is any indication or the way the teams is meshed together, I really don't think that it's going to be a problem in the playoffs. Because when you see these guys talk, they're not calling out Coach Jackson. They're not calling, you know, they're happy. And that's the number one thing you want going into the playoffs. You know, they might not be disciplined, but now's not the time to throw in discipline. You know, we're in mid-April. And all these guys are behind this ideal that Mark Jackson has set. And so I think that I honestly don't think it will be a problem in the playoffs.
No, it won't. And nobody expects them to go too far anyway. But if it was you, who would you rather play, Portland or Houston?
You know, honestly, I to be honest, I haven't looked at the matchup specifically, but I would definitely rather play Houston or Portland or Houston. I don't know if we could play Portland because they would have to go higher in the seed, wouldn't they?
Well, right now they are the 5th seed.
We're the 6th.
They right. Have to move they up. Would. They have a very realistic chance of catching Houston, though.
And then Houston could fall below us, is what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I would say that, you know, you'd rather play Portland just because they had that big streak in the middle, but. You know, I think that Houston would be a good option too because you've got Bogut and O'Neal, and they're really good. You know, they're really good defensive centers, and if you can find a way to stop Howard, you know, the Houston Rockets are basically just another one of those run and gun teams. And as you saw, you know, I'm mentioning Utah and Denver again. We blew out those two, or we blew out, you know, Denver, which is a running team at least, and we're a good scoring team. So if you can turn Houston to that scoring team, you're always going to beat them. But I think Portland has the potential to have a better offense than we do. So you know, I don't know. I might go. Yeah, I'd go with Houston definitely.
I think that would be an interesting matchup. Do you honestly think that Golden State could catch the 5th seed? Because that's going to be, I don't know, you know, at some point, Jackson's going to rest those young people. Once everything gets locked in, he's going to rest them. Houston and Portland have locked in already. San Antonio, Oklahoma City, the Clippers. So there's really only 3 spots up. That should be settled pretty quick. I'm thinking that if Golden State plays Houston, that's going to be a great series. And I honestly think that whoever plays Houston in that first round is going to beat them.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think that they can move up. It's just the only reason I think so is because they're playing against teams that have no real incentive to win. And, you know, Denver's without Ty Lawson. And I just don't see Mark Jackson as the type of coach. You know, he's kind of old school to just rest his guys just for the heck of it. You know, David Lee was coming in pretty prematurely in that playoff series, and I know that he considers the playoffs to be important, but if you can avoid a matchup with the, you know, LA Clippers, you know, as you always say, all Marone, they are really, really good, and you know, they have a great bench, they have pretty much the best talent top to bottom in the entire league. You want to avoid them at all costs, so he's going to be playing these guys right up to the end trying to get that 5th seed from Portland. But if we lose to Portland and you can't get that 5th seed, then he might start resting dudes.
I think they're going to be really, I think it'd be a real entertaining series with the Clippers too, you know, so it should be a lot of fun, dude. Anyway, you enjoy your travels. Thanks for being on the show. We'll talk to you next week. Great stuff.
Thanks for having me on as always.
All right, Zeb, that was Zeb Benbrook on the road somewhere in San Diego, I think. And you can find him at welcometoloudcity.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason show. I want to thank all the guys for being here once again, talk a little baseball, a lot of basketball. Tomorrow we're going to talk NFL draft as well as a little baseball, Mets and Oakland A's. Until then, you all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.
This has been a pre-recorded edition of The Phil Nason Show. Please like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at FlashTennis31. As always, thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.